Hello and welcome to This Is Why Golf Opinion Matters. This is the podcast where we speak to the biggest names in golf to discuss anything and everything to do with the sport that we all love. For those of you who haven't heard about This Is Why Golf before, it's the place to go for all the data and information on why golf has such wide-ranging benefits for all of us. Whether you're an individual, company, or federation, this platform is for everyone. In this episode, we're continuing our chat with three-time major winner and former Ryder Cup captain, Padraig Harrington. In part one, we spoke about topics including health and well-being and junior development. If you haven't listened already, go back and find it now. In part two, we've still got so much to discuss with Padraig, including diversity and inclusion and sponsorship. So let's get straight back to it. What are your thoughts, firstly, on mixed events?
I think people are interested media-wise.
Are the players on board as well?
Yeah, for sure. Players are always on board. If there's a tournament, players will play. They love playing golf. I think from a competitive standpoint, it's tough on the tournament directors and referees setting up the golf course. How do you set up a golf course that balances for both people, that gives both sides an equal chance? Because, you know, it's not just, if everybody had the same distance into the green, it's still a different iron and a different sort of spin rate, you know. So if you hide the pin, you know, the person who's got a physically higher ball flight with more spin has a chance. That pin's not suitable in this particular case. I always find this difficult in a members golf club. So obviously they have mixed tee times and members golf clubs, not mixed foursomes, but actually just, you know, you might have a group of ladies going out, then you might have a group of men going out. Well, if you equate this to the, if you put different levels of men out at the same time, so if you turn around and you put the old codgers out who are hitting it 160 yards in the air, and you put out the low level handicappers hitting it 300 yards in the air, they're going to play at a different pace of play. What I always find fascinating about that is women play so much quicker than men, and I'm completely obsessed with their pace of play, and are always rushing,
Why is that?
You know, but because it's because of this stereotype from years ago that, you know, I don't know why that women were slower, but women are much quicker.
And there's so much frustration if there's a slow four ball in front. It's like, come on,
yes,
hurry up, let us through.
What actually happens is men and women are going at a different rhythm on the golf course. But I would say this to all the women out there playing golf. Fine, be aware of your pace of play and all that sort of stuff. Everybody should be. But when it's your time to hit a golf shot, you own the golf course at that moment. Do not let anybody walk in front of you. Do not let anybody distract you. You own the golf course for that 30 seconds that it takes you to hit the golf ball. Take your time, hit your shot, and move on. Do not rush your moment. It is your golf course. And that's the one thing about golf. Everybody has that respect.
You know, definitely.
Constantly we see women and they're distracted because they're worried about the pace of play. So that's just an old stigma. We've got to get away from it.
It's so important though, isn't it? Your time management on the golf course, you know, being aware of your surrounding, what's going on ahead of you and behind you and with your playing partners, and being ready. You know, ready golf is what I hear all the time, being ready to hit the ball, and not necessarily, you know, if someone's behind you and they're not ready, well, you can take your shot, can't you? Because you can speed up the pace of play, because we don't want a four ball going around in 5 hours. We want, you know, 3.5, 4. We want to try and make golf quicker, especially, well, you know, if you play a 12-hole event, it can be two and a half hours, can't it?
Well, quicker is often the tee boxes and the setup of the golf course and the speed of the greens.
Yeah.
But being aware is the most important thing, as you said. Don't rush your actual shot. And that's what we love about golf. When it's your shot, you get the due respect to your playing partners, that they must be aware of what you're doing and not, you know, not be moving, rattling, whatever, they let you play. And I think that is the great etiquette of golf over the years, is that, you know, it's time for somebody else to play.
Yeah.
You stop, you watch their shot, you watch where it goes, you pay attention to your playing partner when they're hitting their shot, and then you move on.
Yeah, I'm going to take that, another top tip, and own my time over the golf course, over the golf ball even. And now you're an ambassador for the Special Olympics, Padraig. What does that role involve? And tell us a little bit about the Special Olympics.
Well, the Special Olympics came to Ireland in the early 2000s, and it was such a big deal. Like, it was a big, it was one of the biggest sport, okay, it could have been the biggest sporting occasion at that stage ever in Ireland. You know, I contacted the Special Olympics people in Ireland, and we talked to them and said, what can we do? And essentially, since then, I've obviously moved now to being a Special Olympic ambassador worldwide. As I move around the world, I do clinics for the golfers and the coaches, for the Special Olympic athletes and their coaches. So, you know, hopefully giving the coaches an idea of what they should be saying. Somebody else does the organizing, I turn up. And, you know, the amount of times I turn up and I'm busy, you know, maybe I hadn't played that well that day. Maybe, you know, I've been doing interviews and I've run out of time. I'm running over and I'm getting there and I'm a bit stressed and I'm going, you know, this is another thing to do. And then I get there and do the clinic and I walk away getting far more out of it than the athletes.
Mm.
You've never, Special Olympic athletes are the best in the world. You've never seen a more enthusiastic, you know, their outlook, their the way they go about things, their enthusiasm, their enjoyment. And every time I do one, I walk away and go, how good do I feel about myself from being in their company?
That's inspiring.
It's easy. It's just, well, it's selfish. Like, I get far more out of it than the athlete. I hope they get something out of it.
I'm sure they do.
But I would say that to anybody, if they have a skill to give, or even if they don't have a skill, you'd be surprised. The involvement in volunteering, I don't know if Special Olympic athletes are particularly good, because to a person, they seem to have a great outlook. So, out there and do a bit of volunteering. It will, it really, really, it's good for the soul.
Yeah, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant what they do. You're also an ambassador for the RNA. What do you do for them?
Yeah, a lot of them start with testing, equipment testing, you know, when they're interested in changing rules and seeing what happens in real life situations. A little bit with the rules. I've presented their rules because I'm into that sort of stuff, quite nerdy when it comes to golf. I like the rules.
I think you probably know more rules than any golfer on tour.
Yeah, I do.
If there was sort of a quiz, if there was a rules quiz on the Champions Tour, would you win?
I would hope I'd win on any tour. And I've made a few pounds over the years in betting on it, yes, with other saying, you know,
oh, have
that's
you?
Wrong. This
What's
is the
your
way.
Biggest oh, win yes. against who?
I know. I remember getting a few quid off, I think it was Phil Mickelson, and maybe it was Phil was the ruling, and maybe I got it off Luke. I can remember just saying a few things. I always have a few rules in my head that are slightly, so when I see a rule or a rule change, I look at it and try and figure out how will I not make that mistake and how can I learn from that rule. I didn't realize this, but as an amateur golfer, all my fellow amateurs were really scared of me because I knew the rules.
Yes.
I am my worst enemy, as in I am watching and I am doing it, not because I'm devious, it's because I'm contrarian and I want to, oh, you've got that wrong, this is what you should have done.
Golf is, of course, a marketer's dream. Another stat for you, that 44% of golf fans say that sponsorship makes them think about brands and products more positively. So why should sponsors get involved in golf? And what do you think you bring to your personal sponsors?
Well, I think the main... well,
charisma, charm, rules.
Commercial, I know commercially, obviously, sponsors look at golf and understand that there's a high network spending power of people who play golf or around golf. So you're more likely to have a car manufacturer sponsor in an event than a phone company. So we know there's marketing levels. As regards golf, why is golf, why did it end, as you said, 44% would actually be influenced by the marketing in a certain way? Well, as a group, golfers come across as pretty honest people. We self-regulate on the golf course. We're in general well mannered, well behaved. A little bit comes out across, which isn't bad, you know. If you throw my take on the etiquette of the game, years ago I'd get very frustrated with players who get angry, throw the club, do any of that. Now I understand, no, that's their personality. As far as I'm concerned, you can do whatever you like on the golf course as long as you don't interfere with your playing partners and as long as you don't damage the golf course. So if you want to snap all 14 clubs in your bag, I'll stand there and laugh at you and be very happy to see you do it.
And that wouldn't affect you, would it?
No, not at all. I'd find that funny. I would find it crazy, funny, look at this fool, what an idiot. And sometimes I might admire him and say, that was a nice break and I could see that coming. And, you know, I don't have a problem with somebody giving away a golf club on the golf course, frustration, all that sort of stuff. But I have a big problem if you take a divot and you don't fix it. I have a big problem if you don't fix your pitch mark properly. So we do self-regulate in a very good way, which comes out well for our trustworthiness and the how we look. I think people enjoy, you know, golf courses are tidy places, clean places. There's a lot of good aspects that people will see it. I can understand why people would see it as trustworthy and something that reflects well on a product. As regards individuals and people like me, I've gone full circle really with this. You know, when you start off as a rookie, you sign up a sponsor and you end up doing an incredible amount of days for that sponsor. You know, rookies will tell you that, you know, they might have a sponsor and they have 5 or 6 days to do for them in the year, appearances and things. And as you get better, you actually do less of the appearances because your branding's worth more. The sponsor wants to be associated with you. They want their name on your chest or whatever.
Yeah.
And they want that marketing and advertising. And then as you get older to my stage, sponsors want my time again.
Yeah.
So a lot of my sponsorship is I deliver more when I'm out with their clients, teaching them, talking to them, doing after dinner speaking, you know,
that personal,
you know,
going relationship.
Personal relationships and also experience. So what I do, like whether it's conferences and things like that, I can turn up at these, all these sort of different things, you know, that's the stage. So it's kind of full circle, I suppose.
Yeah.
You know, if I was running a tournament, everybody at the tournament, you know, every dinner, lunch, something going on at the tournament would have somebody from tour life there. So you might say, well, gee, we can't get the players there. They're playing the tournament. And you go, yeah. And, you know, to get them there, especially the ones you want, could be very expensive because they've other things to do and they're making so much on the golf course. And as they make more on the golf course, obviously the more expensive the cost to get their time off the course is. But you can always get a caddy. I can guarantee you the caddies will tell you better stories than the players will.
Yeah.
You know, will give you more insight. And, you know, the caddies will turn up for a lot less than the players, if you know what I mean. They, you know,
you're just putting yourself out of business here, by the way.
I believe there's loads of business for everybody.
Good.
Yeah, as in, you know, as I said, there's a lot around golf and the business of golf and, you know, there's a lot of stories and the different personalities and there's a good bit to be talked about.
That's so true. There is, place for everybody.
You're listening to This Is Why Golf, Opinion Matters. We'll be back with Padraig Harrington in just a moment as we continue to look ahead to what 2023 has in store for the world of golf. But just before we do, there's another podcast you might be interested in, which we wanted to tell you about, The Women's Golf Show.
Join me, Jenny Falconer, for the new podcast, Taking the Golfing World by Storm. Now, every fortnight, I'm joined by co-hosts Beth Allen and Ali Whittaker and an incredible guest as we gain insight into women's golf, discuss hot topics in the professional and amateur game, and learn about the untold stories of so many inspirational women across the golf world. You can subscribe now for free and get listening to The Women's Golf Show today.
Thanks, Jenny. Now back to our chat with Padraig.
There was one thing we kind of skipped on, diversity in the game. I grew up at a golf club and I knew no different. So my golf club was, my dad founded the golf club with 12 other policemen and he built the golf course because young policemen coming to the city couldn't afford or were not wanted in the golf clubs. So he convinced the social club of the police to lease them the land, and 12 of them got together and they physically built the golf course. I helped build greens on that golf course at 4 years of age.
Incredible.
So it was all voluntary labor. But what was interesting about it was, obviously, if you're a guard, you can be a man or a woman. So that meant you could be a full member. Now, I know that didn't happen straight away in our golf club, but there wasn't a huge distinction. I played up there and had free run of the place. So as a junior, I never noticed it. You know, I had full run of the place, so I wasn't restricted. I could never join the golf course as a full member because I wasn't a policeman. So in sense of, I was never entitled to join the course when I got to 18 years of age. No, they've since changed that rule. So a lot of things I didn't notice was there. You know, I didn't know the undercurrent of who was accepted and who wasn't accepted in golf, because I wasn't restricted in any way and wouldn't have noticed it. As we've grown up now, you understand, wow, there is issues in golf in terms of who's included and who's not.
Mm.
But coming from Ireland, and especially if you look at the guys who've won majors in Ireland, my dad was a policeman, Shane's dad's an electrician, Rory's dad's a barman. There's very few exclusivity in golf. There's no country club kids in golf. Let's face it.
Yeah.
If you're in the country club, you're going to struggle to make it because you've already at the top. You've nothing to aspire to. You won't have the... It's harder to make it if you're in the country club starting out. It's much easier to make it when you're in the normal club because you always want to get better and aspire.
Yeah, then, you're grafting away.
And then, of course, you now move into a bigger scene and you realise, gee whiz, there is discrimination in golf. There's less with women now, 100%. That's gone, you know, as I said, especially when it gets slightly middle-aged women and up, they're the most lucrative people in the golf club. They want more and more of them. They're filling the weekdays. They're filling, you know, they're socialising and spending the money. So they're highly encouraged. It's weird coming from Ireland because we just didn't see it, didn't realise it. You know, if you play golf, all we care about is how quick do you play? How well do you play? Are you a good person on the golf course? That's what you'll get judged on the golf course.
Yeah.
Not
come and get involved. So, come and play.
Yeah. So it is not the scary place that sometimes people build it up to be. And you will always find outliers. I'm not denying that. You will find a golf club and you will find people who are of different era. And, you know, it's hard to change your you know, people of that era or whatever, but people of my age and younger.
If people are changing around you, then you change, you know.
There's
a ripple
absolutely.
Effect, isn't there? So people's minds are changing. And yeah, I think you've really hit the nail on the head there. It's come and play golf. It's how good you play, your pace of play, etiquette on the course, being aware of your environment, and yeah, just enjoy yourself. You mentioned quite a few DP World Tour players there. Now, the tour itself is in a really good place right now, and we're looking forward to the Ryder Cup in 2023. How do you see next year's DP World Tour going? Yeah, how do you see it panning out over the next 12 months?
Well, look, it obviously, golf is in a very interesting place. DP World, PGA Tour, and LIV. There's a new player, a big player. It's certainly putting up to the others. Whether you like or dislike what LIV is about, you know, they're certainly in the market competing. You know, if you don't like it, let them fail on their own merits. If you do like it, let's see what happens. You know, who knows how successful or not it will be. And they certainly need to jump through a few more hoops, in order to be not necessarily included, because obviously the powers that be would want them out. But for them to be on a level playing field, they certainly need to, you know, there's a few things that need to be worked on. But they do look like they're here to stay. The European Tour, there's dangers ahead for them. They obviously have tied up with the PGA Tour to give them some backing and support. They've done some good things. They look strong in places, but there's room for two big tours and then some other tours behind it. So if LIV becomes that other big tour, you know, the European Tour then is obviously stepping back. So it's very interesting times. As I said, it's probably a great time to be a player right at this moment. Everybody is fighting for their corner and delivering more for players. The European Tour has certainly come strong with certain events and built it up. What you are seeing about on the PGA Tour, European Tour, there is two levels. You know, you have a top tier of tournaments and then an under level, which isn't so bad, because, you know, when a lot of players went to LIV, they said they were going because they didn't want to play so much. Well, what they really meant is they didn't want everybody else playing so much so that they could compete against them. So, like, if you're on the PGA Tour and an average player plays 35 events or 34 events, well, a good player has got to play 30 events to compete with them. And a great player has now got to play 25 events to compete with the 30 players. So, you know, they've always... It's not, so having a two-tier system like they're going with the PGA Tour of 20 elevated events. In my head, in an ideal world, you would have 20 events that count for the FedEx Cup and you'd have 44 events that count for keeping your card.
Okay.
So if somebody wants to play 44 events to keep their card, fine. But the 20 events means that the elite players who want to play, especially a non-American elite player. Like, I used to play 15 events, I think, in total to get into the Tour Championship when I was over there, because I wanted to play my 10 events around the world. I ended up playing about 28 a year because, you know, that's what I did. I played around the world. I played in Europe. I got appearance fees for doing it, and that's how I made my money. I played some events and I did that. Whereas if I was squeezed into, which if I was full-time on the PGA Tour, you know, and we saw Tommy Fleetwood lose his car 2 years ago because, you know, Tommy playing 16 or 17 events, you know, if the year isn't going well for him, he's, you know, can he beat a good PGA Tour player playing 30 events with Tommy playing 17? Mm-hmm. That's why. It's not because Tommy wasn't good enough to keep his card. It was he didn't play enough events to do it. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's the pressures of modern golf at the moment, is everybody wants to play this their amount of events, but they want to play a certain amount to be competitive. So if there was only 20 events in the FedEx Cup, you'd find that, yeah, I only have to play 16 or 17. I'm not giving up a lot against the other guys. I can, if I'm a good enough player, I will still finish high in those rankings. Whereas with 44 events, it's a lot of pressure. And Europe is getting squeezed. These 20 events in the PGA Tour, mm-hmm. every time a player adds an event on the PGA Tour, it's one less event they're going to play in Europe. So that's a tough thing going forward. But hopefully, as I said, you know, there's room, hopefully, and I think there is in the end of the day for Liv. Let him at it. And, you know, ideally, if it was me again as a solution, I would run it a little bit like Indian Premier League. I would say, right, you've got your 10, 12 weeks. Everybody who wants to play can play. And outside of that, you come back and play the rest of the tour. You know, if you want to play 30 events, 12 of them being Liv and 18 elsewhere or whatever it is, fair play to you. Just remember the Indian Premier League with the cricket. This is exactly when it started out.
Oh, yeah.
Players were banned and players were this. And now it's seen, right, there's a three-month period. I'm not quite sure how long the Indian Premier League goes on for. There's a period of time. You go play your cricket in India. You make your money. And outside of that, you come back and play for your county. You play for your country at the other times. So these things can get worked out over time. And we'll wait and see. But as I said, it has been good right now at this moment.
Yeah.
It has been good for the players. The extra competition has caused everything to move up a notch.
Just one more quick question. We're looking forward to the Ryder Cup in 2023. What words of wisdom do you have for Luke Donald?
Looking from the outside, I've had a chat with him at the start, a couple of chats. He seems to be doing everything he can and everything right. Yeah, it looks in good stead. You've got a few young players coming through at the moment and you hope they sustain themselves for the next, you know, 8 months. And he knows his stuff. He's been around enough Ryder Cups. He was an excellent vice-captain with me last time. And I worked with him as a vice-captain the time before and he was excellent. So, yeah, he's doing everything you could ask of him. I would have been a very strong supporter from being a vice-captain with him that Luke knows the job and he knows how to, he's quiet, but he knows how to have a quiet word with people. So there was never, he's good at that. People might, just because he's quiet, people might think he's excellent. He's a very strong character. He has a little, which because he was world number one and so successful, you know, he's hard. You know, he's hard underneath. Just because he's a nice, quietly spoken person doesn't mean he doesn't have the hardness and the gumption underneath to get this job done.
Real insight there. Thank you so much. Really enjoyed chatting to you. I mean, it's going to be fascinating to see how the golfing landscape evolves over the next few months. And thank you for your insights. And also, we've interrupted your holiday. So go back to the beach, go and order a margarita and enjoy yourself. It's been 3 days since you've hit a golf club. I'm hoping you last, a week? 10 days? How long are you there?
I'm here 10 days. Yeah, I think
10 days with no golf.
Yeah, there's a couple of nice golf courses here. So I'm not.
See how you get to like day seven. I'm off. I'm going.
Yeah, but I think the more I go, the more days I go, the less I want to go back.
Yes, yeah.
You know, I'm that kind of, you get used to it. So look, I'm always going to hit enough golf balls, so I don't need to worry about a couple of days off.
No, totally. Go and enjoy yourself. Go and relax. And thank you very much, Padraig Harrington, for joining me on this episode of This Is Why Golf Opinion Matters.
Thank you, Di.
Remember, if you like what you've heard, make sure you subscribe on your favourite podcast provider, and the next episode will drop into your feed automatically. Make sure to also leave us a review too. To find out more, head to thisiswhygolf.com, where there's lots more information on the vast and varied benefits of golf. And you can also find our contact form to get in touch. But until next time, from me, Di Stewart, it's goodbye.